Akhatra Foundation presents the Akhatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're looking at the source material surrounding Celestine and Tina Knowles Lawson. Now that's a name most people recognize,
yeah.
But her own story.
Well, her role as this foundational architect, it's often underestimated, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. It's so important to look past the easy labels, fashion designer, businesswoman, philanthropist, and really focus on what she embodies. The matriarch, the celebrated matriarch of the Knowles Carter dynasty.
And our main source for this is her memoir, Matriarch, on faith, family, and finding your foundation.
Exactly. That's where we're drawing a lot of this from.
And we should be clear, right? This book, Matriarch, it's not just another celebrity-adjacent memoir. It feels more like a blueprint.
That's a great way to put it. It became a bestseller because it offers this this very clear-eyed view of the quiet strength, the sheer hard work that it takes to build something like a cultural empire, basically from the ground up. So our mission here isn't just to talk about the fame.
Not at all. It's really to understand her significance as the visionary architect behind so much of it. The book really lays out a masterclass in building a legacy. You see the entrepreneurial resilience, that fierce maternal love, and this constant willingness to reinvent herself. It really is a template for creation.
Okay, let's unpack that foundation then.
Mm-hmm.
Starting back in Galveston, Texas, she grew up Celestine and Beyonce, and that Louisiana Creole heritage seems really central to her story.
It's absolutely a central context. That heritage, it brings us to the key figure in her early life, her mother, Agnes de Rouault. She was a seamstress and apparently incredibly talented.
Right. And Tina learned sewing directly from her.
Yes. And she talks about it not just as a skill or, you know, a hobby. She calls it a language of love and survival.
A language of survival.
Mm.
That's powerful, especially considering the time and place, the segregated South. Does that mean relying on creativity over money was, well, born out of necessity?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. She credits her mother with teaching her that core lesson. Resourcefulness is the engine of true style. There's that quote, "Style isn't about money, it's about creativity."
Which makes sense when resources are systematically denied.
Precisely. Ingenuity becomes your power tool. And that whole experience navigating segregation, it also forged this really fierce sense of justice in her, a desire to build spaces where Black beauty could just flourish. Without apology.
And that desire that really fuels her early career moves, doesn't it? Moving to California, working as a makeup artist for Shiseido, what happened there? What lit that entrepreneurial spark?
Well, the experience was eye-opening, but also deeply frustrating. She talks about realizing just how stark the lack of diversity was in the mainstream beauty industry back then.
Running into problems with makeup shades.
Constantly. Palettes that just ignored women of color. And she saw it wasn't just a product flaw, it was systemic. An exclusion.
So that frustration became the catalyst. She couldn't wait for the industry to change. She had to build the world she wanted to see.
That's exactly it. That realization sent her back to Texas. And then at just 19 years old, she makes this huge leap.
Opening her own salon, Headliners.
Yes. And she didn't just see it as a business. She called it a sanctuary. That move was critical. It's where she honed her business skills, cash flow, inventory, understanding what the community needed.
So Headliners wasn't just about hair. It was like a cultural hub.
Mm-hmm. And it built her confidence, the confidence she needed later when her role shifted towards supporting Destiny's Child.
Right. Let's talk about that shift, mm-hmm. because this is where that survival skill, the sewing, suddenly meets this huge commercial need.
It's a major turning point. As Destiny's Child started getting noticed, the stylists, the labels, they just didn't get it or didn't want to invest. They lacked vision or maybe just the budget for a young, unproven Black girl group.
They were dismissed.
Repeatedly misunderstood. But instead of backing down, she pivoted, pulled out her sewing machine as this amazing blend of like maternal protection and raw artistic necessity. She just stepped in, became their creative director, indispensable.
And created their iconic look.
On a shoestring. Those hand-sewn coordinated outfits became their signature. Unity, strength, unapologetic Black glamour. It wasn't just about saving money. It was about authentic representation. When the industry failed them, she created that look.
Okay, let's fast forward a bit. Global success happens, but then comes a really significant personal reinvention. After decades being defined by her roles, mother, wife, designer, she faces the end of her 31-year marriage to Matthew Knowles. That was around 2009 to 2011.
Yeah, and that forced a major identity reckoning. That marriage had been the anchor for so much, personally and personally. Its dissolution was very public, very painful. It forced her to ask, you know, who is Tina, really, outside of those contexts?
But the sources suggest it wasn't just a breakdown, it was more like a breakthrough.
It really seems that way. It led to this profound inward journey and then this powerful second act focused on investing in herself.
Like her art collecting.
Exactly. She started seriously collecting art, focusing on championing Black artists, turning her own space into this, like, museum of affirmation. And then she found love again, marrying Richard Lawson in 2015.
And together they founded the Waco Theater Center.
Right. Wabio Waco, where art can occur in LA. This wasn't retirement. It was building a whole new legacy focused on cultural stewardship, nurturing the next generation.
So if we try to distill her core philosophy, looking at matriarch, what's the bedrock? What allowed her to handle all these massive changes and just keep building?
It really seems to come down to what we could call a core trinity: faith, family, and fortitude. Faith, for her, seems to be that deep spiritual grounding. It's the resilience against the public criticism, the private heartbreak. It's the certainty that there's purpose, even in the middle of chaos.
And that faith supports her idea of intentional creation, right? She doesn't wait for permission. Fashion houses say no. She makes the outfits. Industry ignores her community. She builds the salon.
That's it, exactly. It's this principle of actively building your legacy every single day, not just through the big wins, but through consistent, conscious action. Mentorship, passing down values.
And her motivation seems layered.
Definitely. It starts with that fierce maternal instinct: protect, provide, empower her daughters. But then it broadens out. It becomes about correcting a flawed narrative, you know, about Black women's representation. And eventually it evolves into this cultural stewardship we see with Waco.
Her approach to adversity, It feels almost like a formula she follows. The memoir points to a three-part strategy.
That's right. Pivot, pray, and persevere. She doesn't seem to view obstacles as stop signs. They're more like divine redirections.
So if one path is blocked,
she uses her ingenuity to find another way, prays for guidance and strength, and then just works harder than the challenge. Relentless perseverance.
Let's pinpoint three moments where she really had to put that strategy into action. The first one has to be opening the Headliner Salon in 1973. That seems incredibly courageous.
It's hugely pivotal. She's 19, pouring her life savings into it. This wasn't just launching a business. It was this, like, defiant act of economic and creative independence, especially then for a Black woman.
And the impact was massive for her personally. It was her real-world MBA, right? Learning management, customers.
All of it.
Yeah.
Forged in that salon. It gave her the foundation, the confidence to later invest everything she had in her daughter's dreams.
Okay, turning point two. This is the one that really put her on the global map as a creative force, becoming the wardrobe designer for Destiny's Child in the mid-1990s.
And we have to remember, this came out of rejection. The fashion world said no.
Yeah.
So she stepped up. It wasn't just protecting her kids. It was validating her own artistic vision, fusing those two things together.
And this leads to that amazing quote that really captures her spirit.
Oh, yeah. When the world tells you there is no room for you at the table, you don't argue. You don't beg for a seat. You go and build your own table. Now, that wasn't just talk. It was action. She literally built the visual identity that defined an era.
Then the third turning point. Profoundly difficult, but it seems to have solidified her own identity. The divorce from Matthew Knowles, 2009 to 2011.
Just imagine the weight of that. 31 years. Marriage, business, family, all intertwined, and then it dissolves so publicly. The identity crisis must have been immense, reinventing herself while under that intense scrutiny.
But the impact, ultimately, was transformation. It seems like it was the catalyst she needed for real self-discovery, self-investment.
Absolutely. That's when she really started pouring into her own passions, like the art collecting. It proved that the strength of the matriarch wasn't dependent on a partnership. It was self-generated, whole.
Looking back at her life through the memoir, what are some of the sort of universal human lessons we can take away? One thing that stands out is the unseen labor.
Oh, definitely. We see the glossy success, the empire, but her story hammers home that it's all built on grit, sacrifice, sleepless nights, serious financial strain. The real work happens way behind the scenes.
She also models handling public conflict with, well, with adversity and grace. Think about the Destiny's Child lineup changes, the divorce she navigated, those incredibly public, painful moments with such dignity, focused on healing, moving forward, not blame.
Which connects to this idea of the evolving purpose. Her initial focus was so clearly her children. But Matriarch shows that for life to stay meaningful, your purpose has to be allowed to grow, to change.
Her second act proves that.
Completely.
Back
W. Waco, the art, remarrying. It shows life doesn't stop when the kids are grown. It's a new chapter. You invest in yourself, in the community. She's become this incredible icon for women redefining aging and reinvention.
And one final lesson seems to be her leadership through service, whether in the salon or managing a global group's image.
Her style was always rooted in service, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Identifying needs, meeting them, uplifting people, not controlling them. That feels like the difference between truly building something lasting and just, you know, managing things.
Okay, let's try to boil this down. If you had to pull out three key takeaways from her story, what would they be?
All right, let's try. First, maybe an emotional insight. What Tina Knowles Lawson really teaches us is that love is not passive, it is active. Real, lasting love needs consistent action, dedication, conscious choice day in and day out. Especially, she seems to say, when you don't feel like doing it.
That's powerful. What about an intellectual takeaway, maybe for professionals listening?
I think the key intellectual insight is about the strategic integration of multiple roles. Forget chasing that elusive idea of balance. She demonstrates synergy. Her business skills funded the family. Her fashion talent boosted her daughter's careers. She made her different roles strengthen each other.
Integrated, not balanced. Okay. And finally, a universal truth.
The most fundamental universal insight has to be that excellence is a non-negotiable standard. Her success wasn't luck. It was the compound effect of thousands of consistent, meticulous daily choices, sewing that seam perfectly, making the tough business call, doing it right, whether anyone was watching or paying immediately. You choose excellence for excellence's sake.
Her memoir really drives home that lasting empires aren't built on fame alone. They're built on this incredibly strong foundation, creativity, self-worth, and just relentless, purposeful action.
Well said. That's the core of the Matriarch's message.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.